buzzes. It's a group text from my sisters. He's coming into the store. I immediately know who they're talking about, so I text back, "So?" Darius looks surprised to see me in there, and he quickly looks away. He's so obvious it's not even funny. We haven't talked since the Bushwick Riot concert at the park. "Hey," I say. "Hey," he says, and stands in front of the counter next to me. "Hey, rich boy," Hernando says. Darius presses his lips and looks down. Part of me wishes that Darius would speak up if he doesn't like something, or else the guys around here will tear him to pieces. He can't let it all show up on his face so that they don't misinterpret his expressions. Our neighborhood is loud, and the people are even louder with their thoughts and opinions. A smooth, old-school R&B groove is playing in the background, and it makes this whole situation weird, as if this is a music video and Darius is the star and I'm just an extra. He's that well put together. Again, he's wearing a button-down shirt and two tight khaki shorts. I can tell that they're not the ones from the day we went to the park. These are cargo khaki shorts, and I want to kick myself for noticing that detail. I mean, doesn't he have chilling clothes? "Would you like a picture?" he asks with a half smile, and I jump on the inside, not realizing that I was staring that hard. "No," I quickly say, feeling stupid for letting him catch me like that. "Do you have any pencils?" he asks Hernando. "Pencils," Hernando says. He grabs a pen tied to a string and hands it to Darius. Darius sighs and shakes his head. "You need, like, one pencil?" I ask. "Do you sell a box or a pack of pencils?" Darius asks Hernando again, while ignoring me. "Nah, you gotta go on Broadway for that. The 99-cent store," Hernando says, stroking Tomigeri as he strolls onto the counter with his fat, furry body. Darius steps back as if Tomigeri is some sort of alien creature. "What, you're afraid of bodega cats?" I ask, smirking. "Maybe I'm allergic to cat dander and I'd like to buy a banana or something. Don't you think that's grounds for a lawsuit?" Both Hernando and I laugh out loud, and Darius immediately drops his head and shoves his hands into his pockets. He stands there for a long minute until three of the corner dudes come in and my heart skips a beat. All their eyes are on Darius as they walk in and even as they pass him, and one purposely bumps into him. "Sup, Z?" one of the guys says. It's Jay, who I've known forever. He doesn't take his eyes off Darius. "What up, Jay? What you been up to this summer?" I ask just to ease the tension. His other boys are getting drinks out of the coolers in the back. From the corner of my eye, I can tell that Darius doesn't know what to do. He's looking at the stuff on the wall behind the counter as if he can't decide on something, but there's nothing but batteries, lighters, cigarettes, condoms and such. Hernando is on his phone now, with Tomigeri curled up under his hand. Jay and his boys are talking shit, and they're extra loud. I know exactly what they're doing, so I tap Darius's arm and motion for him to leave with me. "Hey, yo, Z," Jay calls out again. "I heard you were chilling with my boy Warren the other day." "That's none of your business, Jay." I grab the plastic bag of snacks and make my way out of the store, hoping that Darius is behind me. "What you mean that's none of my business? That's my boy." "Bye, Jay," is all I say. "Should I let Warren know that you chilling with this dude right here?" Jay says. I can tell by how close his voice is that he's following us out of the store. I turn to see Darius right behind me, so I ask, "Darius, don't you go to school with Warren?" "Yeah," he says, and his voice is much deeper than usual. Then I poke my head around Darius and say, "Mind your business, Jay." The guys fall back, and I'm relieved. They know not to mess with me. But I'm worried that if Darius is ever by himself in that bodega, they will definitely start some shit with him. We're at the corner, waiting for the light to change, and Darius is standing beside me. Thank goodness. I tried to see his face from the corner of my eye. "Were you gonna let them mess with you?" I ask. "Mess with me?" "Yeah, they were gonna start shit, and you were just gonna stand there, right?" He doesn't say a word as we cross the street and walk back toward our homes. "You can't walk around here thinking that you're better than everybody else. These guys will put you in your place." Is that a warning? He asks. No, that's good advice. We reach the corner of his house, and I can tell that my sisters are pretending not to be watching us. Thanks, but no thanks. I can handle myself just fine. I laugh. From what I can tell, you don't know anything about street code. Now he looks at me dead on. He's not smiling. His jaw is not moving. So I stop laughing. Why? 'Cause of my clothes? Come on, Darius. If a bunch of guys walk into the bodega, you gotta acknowledge them. A nod, a what's up, a dap, something, anything. You don't just stand there and pretend they're invisible. And if your boy's name comes out their mouth, you gotta defend him. That's street code. Now his jaw moves at the mention of Warren. He shifts his weight from one foot to the other. He blinks and looks every which way. He inhales deep and says, "Where can I get pencils around here?" You mean you don't have no pencils in that big old house? No office supplies? No things you need, like pencils? He inhales. No. Hey, yo, Kayla, I yell out to my sister across the street. You got any pencils? Kayla immediately runs inside the house. Thanks, Darius says. You draw or something? Yeah, but I need a number 2 pencil to take a practice test. You're in summer school. No, SATs. He's not looking at me. He cocks his head back as if he's annoyed that I'm still here with him. Warren is in summer school, but you know that already, right? I raise my eyebrows because that's definitely shade thrown at Warren. Yeah? I lie. So you've known him since the 7th grade, huh? Yeah, is all he says, then turns away as if he's done with this small talk. I could walk away because he's clearly annoyed with me right now. But if he doesn't want me here asking him a bunch of questions, then that's exactly what I'll do. SATs, huh? You're gonna be a senior? Yeah. But isn't it a little late? I took mine in the spring. You had a perfect score? Or close to it? He asks, looking toward Kayla as she crosses the street. No, it was okay. Enough to get me into Howard. Well, I'm trying to get my best score, he says, 'cause you're trying to get into Harvard. Not Howard, right? He starts to say something, but Kayla reaches us and hands Darius a few pencils with a big smile on her face. In no time, Layla is crossing the street behind her just to be nosy. Harvard? No, he says. Thanks for the pencils. He starts to walk back into his house, but I can't think of anything more to say. I'm not ready to let him leave yet. I'm still talking. I want to be the one to end this conversation. I want to ask him what schools he's applying to, but I don't want to look thirsty, especially with Kayla and Layla standing there, looking at me as if I'm about to make some moves on this boy when it's the furthest thing from my mind. But he suddenly turns around and walks closer to us. Kayla, he asks while pointing to Layla. Guess again, Layla sings. Then he points to Kayla. Okay, Kayla. She nods. Kayla and Layla, he says, pointing to the right ones. Sorry about the other day. It's just, I didn't feel like dancing. The twins are beside themselves. They trip over each other trying to reel Darius into a conversation. That's okay. I mean, you don't know us like that. But you can dance, though. If not, we're gonna have to show you. Don't worry, there'll be another block party. You can dance with Zuri next time. I give Layla a death stare and I roll my eyes at Darius just to make it clear that I still can't stand him. Darius puts his hands up as if to say he's had enough. He smiles and nods his head to excuse himself. In no time, he's at his front door and he walks into his house without looking back. And my sisters and I are still standing there like 3 thirst buckets. I shove the plastic bag of snacks into Layla's hand and grab both their arms to cross the street. They can't wait to give Marisol and Charlize the lowdown on how Darius apologized to them, but I head straight into my bedroom. I glance out my window at the mini mansion across the street, and I spot Darius stepping closer to the wide window on the 2nd floor of his house. I step back away from view so he doesn't see me too. He's staring down, moving his head about as if he's looking for someone. I smile. I can't help it.
11. It's summer vacation, and Mama never gets up before we do when there's no school. I'm usually the first one to wake up. Well, The first one after Papi, if he has to go in for an early shift at the hospital. But this morning, Mama barges into our bedroom and turns on the lights. "Y'all are not gonna believe this," she sings as she shuffles in holding a white envelope. I prop myself up on my elbow. I'm on the bottom bunk, so there's no sitting for me. Janae just rolls over, Kayla opens one eye, Marisol is fully awake, and Layla doesn't move one inch. Mama sits her big bottom on Janae's bed and fidgets with the envelope in her hand. I look at her face to see if whatever is in that envelope is good news or bad news. She's grinning from ear to ear, and her eyes are wide and bright. Mama gives Janae a kiss. "This is all 'cause of you, sweetheart." I roll out of bed and sit next to Mama. I spot gold fancy lettering on the envelope, but Mama is moving around too much for me to see the full words. Janae is sitting up now, and Mama hands her the envelope first. All my sisters have gathered around on the floor because Mama is cheesing hard and is clasping her hands as if this envelope is about to change our lives. But Janae's face tells a different story. She doesn't jump out of bed and squeal. She doesn't clap and run out of the bedroom to tell Papi, like she did when she got her acceptance and scholarship letter to Syracuse. She just smiles and clutches the envelope to her chest. "What is it?" I finally ask. Layla tries to take the envelope from her, but Janae holds it tight. "Is it money?" Marisol asks. "Is it a scholarship?" I clarify. "Or a study abroad thing?" "Is it a love letter?" Layla asks. Mama takes the envelope from Janae, pulls out the letter, steps into the middle of the room, clears her throat, and begins. "We, the Benitez family, have been invited..." She turns up her nose and pokes out her lips as if pretending to be fancy. "To a cocktail party." She says this in a fake British accent. All my sisters laugh. "A cocktail party?" I ask. "A cocktail party," Mama repeats with an even worse British accent. The twins laugh even harder. "Cocktail," Layla shouts, holding her belly and slapping her thigh. "Wait a minute. Who invited us to a cocktail party?" I ask, because we've been invited to parties before. Birthdays, weddings, funerals, graduations, but none of them have ever been called a cocktail party. "You need a cocktail dress for a cocktail party," Janae says, ignoring my question. She goes over to our shared tiny closet and pulls out dress after dress. "Do you need a cock and a tail too?" Kayla laughs. She and Layla give each other a high five, and I want to throw a shoe at them to make them shut up. I finally grab the envelope from Marisol and read the whole thing out loud. "Dear Benitez family, you've been cordially invited to the new Darcy residence for cocktails, dinner, and lively conversation." "I knew they were going to have a party in that house," Layla squeals. "Now we get to see it too." "Should I bring the chicken or the pork?" Mama says. "Or maybe they like finger foods. How about some tiny pastelitos or some fried plantains? I knew those rich folks were gonna come here and bring some good luck with them." The next Saturday, we arrive at the front door of the Darcy house. Janae is the one to ring the bell because according to Madrina, she's the one who has led us all to this door in the first place. I'm dressed in a plain denim skirt, flowery top, and a pair of Janae's sandals. I look like I've made the least effort for this party compared to my sisters, who are dressed like they're heading to prom. "I'm gonna need some company in case Ainsley's busy with guests or something," Janae had said. "Please, Zuri. By coming here, I took one for the team, for the fam, for my dear sister." I don't smile when Mrs. Garcia greets us. Her eyes immediately drop down to our shoes. So I look down too, to see Mama wearing her leopard print platform stilettos that she bought for her 40th birthday party at a small club in Bed-Stuy. My face gets hot with embarrassment, because I knew that this wasn't the kind of party for those kinds of heels. Mr. Darcy shows up behind her, and it's only then that she opens the door wider. "Welcome, Benitez family," Mrs. Darcy sings in her strange accent. "It's British, but not quite white people British. It's kind of bootleg fancy, like a knockoff Louis Vuitton bag. This is the closest I've seen her, and she looks more like a big sister to Ainsley and Darius than their mother." Mrs. Darcy's face drops when Mama hands her the aluminum pans. Mama clears her throat. A preview of my catering business, she says too loudly. The top one is pastelitos. I learned how to make them from my husband, Benny. Since I ain't Dominican and all, I had to learn how to cook that food to keep my man. She laughs, and her voice echoes throughout the room full of people. And the bottom pan has griot, Haitian fried pork. I'm Brooklyn, born and raised, but Haitian all the way. You see my daughters? Look at their figures. That comes from the good cultural foods we feed them. No skinny minis in my house. You should have some griot, my mother says, looking down at Mrs. Darcy's fitted sundress. Where your people from? Mama talks a mile a minute without even giving Mrs. Darcy a chance to say a word before she strolls into the living room with her heels click-clacking on the hardwood floors. Marisol and the twins follow right behind her. London. My people are from London. A neighborhood called Croydon, Mrs. Darcy says to us because Papi, Janae, and I are still standing there waiting to be invited in. We just nod before Mr. Darcy shakes Papi's hand and gently pulls him inside. In a second, both Janae and I are back in the Darcy house, and we can't believe how different it looks and feels with soft music playing in the background, the hum of voices and people. Different kinds of people. There's a mix of black and not black, white and not white, and everything in between. Everyone looks really neat and polished. I look down at my own clothes. My skirt looks old, like it's from a whole other decade. Then I remember that it's actually Mama's from when she was in high school. The stitching from my sandals is coming loose. My toes are crusty and my knees are ashy. I want to run back home and change. Actually, I want to run back home and stay there. But Janae and I both spot them at the same time, and my sister grabs my hand and squeezes it. Ainsley and Darius. Darius and Ainsley. Their faces, their shoes, their clothes. No guy in the hood wears bow ties and suspenders and dress pants so skinny and fitted we can actually tell how their legs are bowed, slightly curved around the knees as if they're Olympic runners, and they work out. It's easy to tell that they work out. Janae leaves me behind as Ainsley takes her hand and walks her to the far corner of the room to introduce her to an older, good-looking black couple. Now I really don't want to stay. I turn around to see that the front door is way too far, and I'd have to walk through the Darcy parents, as well as Mama and Papi, to get to it. Club soda or cranberry juice? A person in all black asks. I shake my head no. But someone takes one of the clear, bubbly glasses and hands it to me. It's Darius. We're both silent as I grab the glass from him, our hands brushing. For a moment, I think he purposely touches my hand because he smiles a little. I glance away. When I look back, our eyes meet, so I take a sip of the drink, then gulp down the whole thing out of pure nervousness. Slow down, he says. I know it's not wine, but you can pretend. He gives me a smirk as the twins come to stand next to us. Layla's holding a glass of deep red liquid. Z, why are you so corny? You should have this instead of that. Layla says, swirling the glass around while holding up her pinky. She takes a long sip and coughs. Kayla pats her back, giggling. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Darius step aside to talk to someone else, and I'm both relieved and embarrassed. I thought y'all don't like cranberry juice, I say to the twins. It's not cranberry juice, Layla sings with a wide smile. We're bad and bougie up in this bitch. Layla, I whisper, yell through clenched teeth, and try to grab the glass from her. But she snags it back, and some of it spills onto her dress. I turn slightly sideways to see that Darius has his eyes on us. I grab Layla's arm to pull her away, but she keeps talking. I'm so glad Janae finally learned how to get a rich boyfriend. She better stay in his pocket so we can keep living this good life. Layla says this loud enough for the people around to hear, possibly including Darius. I pinch her arm so hard that she can't even scream. She knows that I mean business. If you don't get your act together, I'm gonna tell Mama and Papi about all the times you cut school last year, I whisper in her ear. Even Kayla's mouth drops open when I say this. Another lady in black comes over and holds an empty tray out in front of me, and I grab Layla's glass and place it on the tray. What was that? I ask her. Red wine, she says and walks away. Layla's holding her arm and covering the spot where I pinched her. Tears are welling up in her eyes while I give her the death stare. Well, it's more than a death stare. It's an, I'm about to hit you so hard, you're going to end up 6 feet under stare. And these are my twins. Mama's voice sings from behind me, and Layla quickly fixes her face. They're headed to the 9th grade. They're my pride and joy, and they're also giving me my premature gray hairs. The twins quickly change their tune, because while I'll only pinch and stare at them, Mama will straight up call them out and embarrass them in front of all these people, like how they just embarrassed me. I look around the room for Darius, to see if there's any hint that he might have heard what Layla just said about Janae being a gold digger. I know it's not true, but Darius is dumb enough to believe what comes out of my sister's big mouth. I spot him standing next to Ainsley, and they're both looking in our direction while Janae talks to Carrie. I quickly turn away, but I can still see them out of the corner of my eye. Ainsley's eyes are glued to us. Darius is whispering something into his ear, and Ainsley's face changes. I recognize that look. It's that same look people used to give us when Mama would get on a crowded train with a double stroller holding the twins, me, Marisol, and Janae with our messy hair, runny noses, and each with a bag of chips to keep us occupied while Mama quiets down the babies. It's the look that assumes that Mama is a single mother, that she's on government assistance, that she beats us when she's tired, that we all have different fathers, that we live in the projects, and that we're ghetto. Everybody used to look at us like that. White, black, other mothers with kids who thought they were being responsible by only having 2 or 3. I'd look back at them with defiance and a little pride, a look that says that I love my family, and we may be messy and loud, but we're all together and we love each other. That's when I perfected my Bushwick mean mug. Janae eases toward Ainsley, but his whole vibe has changed. I can tell that Janae is waiting for Ainsley to respond to something she just said, but he looks around as if this conversation is the last place he wants to be right now. So I walk over to my sister, worried that something is about to go down. And at that same moment, Ainsley says, "Please excuse me, Janae." He walks away, heading toward the kitchen, escaping. "Ainsley, where are you going?" Janae asks. "Hey, Nene, wait," I start to say, but I'm ignored as my sister brushes past me and goes running after him. "Darius, what did you just say to your brother?" I say. Darius just shrugs and says, "Clearly something that needed to be said." "What? You're a smart girl, Zuri. You'll figure it out." And with that, Darius walks away. My stomach drops as I watch Janae say something to Ainsley with a confused smile. He says something without a smile. Her smile diminishes, but there's still hope in her eyes as she speaks. Ainsley shakes his head, shrugs, and places his hands on Janae's shoulders. He looks like he's both comforting her and holding her away from him at the same time. Janae's smile completely disappears. Ainsley mouths, "I'm sorry," before he slips into the crowd, and that's my cue to go over to her. "Janae," I whisper while gently taking my sister's arm. Her eyes are welling up with tears. "What just happened? What did he say?" "Zuri, let go, please." Her voice is rough. She pulls away from me and pushes through the fancy people. I swear all madrinas orishas, if Ainsley has hurt her in any way. I turn to the Darcy boys, and part of me wants to go over there and tell them off to their faces. But that's exactly what they would expect. I curse under my breath and follow my sister, my heart pounding in my ears. "Pretty rich boy. Hey, rich boy. How much for that dollar? I need to buy a dream. I've gathered the clouds and stars to form a cheerleading team." Shouting, "Shoot your shot," from the sidelines, thinking that if I win, they all have to turn at this wheel to take it for a spin. My mama wants to play too, but she's late to this game. "A dollar is a dollar," she says. "Things are still the same. But if you sell me this dollar, I'll owe you 3. Work myself to the bone, none left for family and me. Now you got my $3 with your dreams already paid for. Walking into fancy rooms, never kicking down a door. But you own that door, that room, that house, and its land. So I'd have to give you 4 more dollars just to pay for where I stand. If you could, you'd charge me for the air I breathe, the dreams I dream, even the love I love. Make my own beating heart turn on me like some scheme.
12. I bring some of the fancy food from that cocktail party up to the roof in a small container. Janae is already sitting cross-legged on the blue tarp, but she's facing the other direction, as if trying to avoid the house across the street. I don't blame her. So we face Hernando's bodega instead, where we can see some of the guys on the corner doing what they usually do. It feels good to see them there. I've never known Hernando's to not have men sitting outside, young or old. Some people think they're up to no good and that they're wasting their time, but I think they're really there to look out for the block, for the whole hood, like gatekeepers. They know who's coming in and out. They know the faces of all the people who pass them. Even with their big, fancy house on the corner, those Darcy boys couldn't care less about what's happening on this block, much less this neighborhood. They bring outsiders to show off their house and talk about how much better they are than the people who are already here. I can't stand them, I say out loud. Janae sighs long and deep.
You were right, she says. I'm sorry, I say.
Me too, she says.
A long thread of silence keeps us connected. I know what she's thinking. She's replaying all the moments with Ainsley in her mind. What he said to her just now, but also the other times. How he made her feel, how he touched and kissed her. So I have to ask, did you guys know? She cuts me off.
Z, he was a complete gentleman. I thought he was genuinely interested in me. We talked about everything. And we laughed a lot. He wasn't like any of the other guys out here.
Huh, clearly.
He was really, really nice to me.
Well, nice doesn't cut it, Nay. I'll take keeping it real over nice any day.
He was even nice when he broke it off.
Broke it off? How exactly did he break it off? I unwrap my napkin of tiny meatballs at the end of toothpicks and hands one to Janae.
He said, I'm just not ready for something serious right now, and he didn't want to stop me from dating anyone else.
He said that? I asked before eating the tiny meatball.
Yep, as if I'd even want to date anyone else.
I throw the tiny meatball stick back into the container and grab Janae's before she pops it into her mouth. I stand and walk close to the edge of the roof with the container in hand.
Zuri, what are you doing?
Janae asks. I ignore her and take one tiny meatball at a time and try to fling them across to the Darcy's roof. They don't quite land there, but I step back and try to throw the little things with all my might, one by one. Take back your stupid, useless tiny meatballs, I yell. When I turn to her, I catch Janae wiping her eyes.
Are you crying?
No, she says and blinks back tears. I sigh and go over to sit next to her and pull her in. I lay her head on my lap so I can braid the side of her hair. This always relaxes her.
You didn't know him that well, Nay.
It's not that, she sobs. Now she lets it all out as my hands rub her scalp. Janae has always been the sensitive one. If I start to tear up just because Papi's hard on me, Janae will straight up bawl at any hint of disappointing our father.
He was really different, Z. I mean, I met guys at school. And they were all right, but none of them were really interested. You know how many more girls there are than guys at my school?
Lots.
I didn't just want to hook up with anybody. I wanted a real relationship. Nobody's trying to have a relationship their freshman year of college. And it felt like that was the direction we were going. And
her voice trails off.
Janae, are you serious? Come on. What about your grades, focusing on getting a job right after you graduate, and us, Mama and Papi?
I ask, finishing a braid.
Just because I like somebody doesn't mean I forget everything else in my life. People have relationships, Z.
Yeah, but it's such a distraction, and if it doesn't work out, then it was a waste of time.
She gets up from my lap and looks at me. So you being with Warren is a waste of time?
No.
We're just chilling like I do with Charlize, like we are now. You know damn well that it's not the same.
Lie down. I'm not done with your hair yet, I say, trying to change the subject.
Zuri.
All right, I sigh.
It's just that I don't get you, Janae. Why do you have to fall so hard and so fast? Ainsley was not right for you, and I told you that. I knew this would happen.
We're quiet for a long moment before she asks,
How do you know? How do you know if the guy you meet won't be the one you spend the rest of your life with?
I sigh again. I don't think Mama knew that she'd still be with Poppy way after high school. Maybe they took it one day at a time, like going up a flight of stairs or something. You take each step, and at some point, you land. You don't have to climb anymore, or it stops getting so hard.
We were still climbing, though.
No, you were still climbing. He was on a nice tour of the neighborhood. You were all the way up those stairs, and he was still at the bottom snapping pictures and shit.
She shakes her head and sighs. It didn't feel that way. I swear, even if it was just a couple of weeks, it felt as if we were both climbing while holding hands. He was so excited for me to meet his family, Z. He introduced me to his grandparents. He kissed me right in front of them. And then, out of nowhere, he did an about-face.
I know exactly what happened. He met your family. She purses her lips and furrows her brows, and I can tell that she's about to cry again. I let her. I don't look at her when she wipes her tears from her cheeks. I don't judge her. I know her too well for that. But I'm judging Ainsley Darcy. Janae cries herself to sleep that night, and I can't stand to hear it. Part of me hopes that she won't spend the rest of her life crying over boys or men who break her heart. One day, she'll have to toughen up. She'll have to be the hard candy shell to her own gooey sweetness. I lie in my bed, wide awake, listening to the faint sounds of drums coming from Madrina's basement. Tonight is one of her bembe ceremonies to celebrate some of her godchildren. An orisha will be called down tonight, and it will probably be Ochun. I slip out of my bed and tiptoe barefoot to the front door. I turn the lock open as silently as I can and make my way down to the basement. Madrina grins at me as I walk down the crooked wooden stairs. It's cool and damp down here, the heat of summer held at bay. The room is crowded tonight with men and women from the neighborhood, some with their heads wrapped with white fabric like Madrina. They all smile when they see me. I recognize them from some of Madrina's consultations, and I know all their business. I find a spot in the corner to listen to the musicians build up the tempo so the spirits can get called down. Bobito is the master drummer for the ceremony. He sits on a folding chair with a huge bembe drum between his legs. He's bald, but he still wears a yellow bandana on his head where sweat gathers along the edge. Next to him is the second drummer, Manny, a shorter man with a mustache so thick his lips are invisible. Manny wears his yellow bandana around his neck, and he's always in a white tank top, no matter how cold it is outside. And Wayne is Poppy's good friend from way back in elementary school. These drummers have known me since I was a baby. And when I come down from upstairs, they always call me to dance to the drums. They call me the daughter of Ochun.
Come sit near me. Don't hide, Madrina calls out to me.
She pulls a wooden stool close to her. She's pushed her consultation table into a corner, and on it are half a dozen yellow candles with their bright dancing flames. Her face glows a rich golden brown against her colorful beads and white headscarf. Madrina can probably read it all over my face that I need to talk.
I'm worried about Janae, Madrina, I say as I sit down. That boy broke her heart.
Ah, see. But what about your heart, Zuri Luz? She says. Madrina takes a cigar and lights it from one of the candles. She brings it to her red lips and pulls deep. When she lets out the smoke, it swirls and dances over all the candles as if performing for Ochun, too.
This isn't about me. Madrina, Janae was crying over some boy she just met.
Who? The investor's son across the street? That's not just some boy, Zuri. He is a rich and charming boy, and very handsome, don't you think? All the fine things that are meant to seduce women. She inhales and exhales the sweet dancing smoke.
Do you think you are so different?
I roll my eyes hard at that one. Please, Madrina, ain't nobody seducing me,
And if someone is trying to get with me like that, then he can go ahead with his stank self. But my mind drifts to Warren and to Darius. Madrina looks at me dead on with a smirk. Bobito is drumming a solo, and more people are trickling in. These things don't start until a little bit after midnight, and some of these people work in the morning, including Madrina, who sometimes takes clients as soon as the bembe is over. Dance with us tonight, Zuri. Madrina squeezes my hand and I nod. Dancing in a bembe is something I've done since I was a little girl. The drumming sounds good, and so does Madrina's singing. I love feeling the beat of the drums in my body and letting go of everything as I dance. I'm not dressed for this, but Madrina always has a wide flowing white skirt for any newcomers to these ceremonies. So I pull one over my pajamas and it reaches my ankles. I dance barefoot so that I'm closer to the ground, closer to los antepasados, as Madrina says. There's also a pile of fabric for anyone to use to wrap their heads. Madrina says it's where the orishas enter. Tonight, it's Ochun who's supposed to fill our heads with thoughts and dreams of beautiful, sparkling things, pretty faces, soft touches, warm hugs, tender kisses, and deep connection. So I wrap my head with the plain white fabric because I want this Ochun out. Bobito, Manny, and Wayne find a groove. Then comes in Madrina's bellowing song about Ochun, the Santeria River goddess of love, and I begin to move like the water. Dance of the River Goddess. If oceans are the wombs of the world, then I am the interconnecting, umbilical cord with deep love flowing like the swirling hems of dresses in dances for you, goddess. And instead of sea salt, I'm sprinkled with golden dust to shimmer like the sun because it loves me back even while beating on my wrapped head like a tambora. And I am born hot and thirsty, panting at the edge of a river, wanting to submerge my head deep within the bottom of the clear, cool water. Wepa! Madrina sings. I'm grinning from ear to ear now, because I didn't realize just how much I love dancing to drumbeat rhythms that pull at my core. I take the hem of my wide skirt with both hands and move it about like a wave. And with my swirling and flowing skirt and dancing body, I form a river. The drumming ebbs and flows, comes to a crescendo before stopping completely. Then I am stagnant water again, like all those tears I hold in and never let flow. Everyone claps, and some even throw dollar bills at me, an offering. I hope this won't be your last dance, Suri, daughter of Ochun, Madrina says, clasping her hands and smiling brightly at me. Something brand new stirs inside and all around me, as if I've been turned inside out. I immediately know that this was more than just a dance, and maybe Madrina was right all along. Maybe there is something real in these spirits. There's a quiet humming of praise for Madrina. Gracias, Madrina, gracias. I leave the basement. With my dollar bills in hand and Madrina's skirt still around my waist, I race up the stairs, past my apartment, and quietly slip up to the roof. My lungs are still reaching for the night air as the orishas embrace me. 13. Warren brings flowers to my door. Papi isn't here to see him, and Mama and my sisters are visiting with neighbors down the block. Part of me wants to rush him away from here so I don't have to answer to my parents, but I know I need to introduce him to Mama and Papi at some point. I take my favorite spot on the steps after he hands me the colorful bouquet I recognize from the Key Food on Broadway, so I side-eye him to let him know that game recognizes game. He can't play a player. What? You don't like them? He asks, trying to hold in a laugh. I just thought the flowers from the Key Food on Broadway were for the people on their way to Wyckoff Hospital, I say. Well, obviously I wasn't on my way to the hospital. Aren't you gonna smell them? Warren asks. He's kind of dressed up with a button-down shirt, but not a Darius and Ainsley kind of dressed up. He looks smooth with a little bit of edge. Crisp shirt, jeans, and almost new sneakers. His fresh haircut makes the dimple on his cheek stand out. I sniff the flowers and shake my head. You ever had a guy give you flowers before? He asks. His phone keeps buzzing in his pocket, and he pulls it out to silence it. I see the name Alana before he shuts it off. I give him a look. Don't pat yourself on the back just yet, Warren. Flowers are cool, but we're still just chilling. He laughs. Aye, ZZ. Now, let's get off this block and chill somewhere else. How about we stay right here? I say while looking up and down the block for any sign of Mama. Aren't you gonna get in trouble? He asks. I'll get in trouble if we keep going out and you never meet my parents. Oh, so we're going out now? I mean literally going out, like leaving the neighborhood. My parents want to know who I be rolling with. And since you're from around here, maybe they already know your parents. He laughs. I doubt it. My mother and your mother were definitely not in the same circles. How about your father? I ask. He's not from around here. Let me guess, locked up, second family, or maybe your mother was the side chick? Oh, I see you've already put me in a box and wrapped me in newspaper, and I'm the latest headline. Black teen boy from the projects with absentee father makes it into New York City's top private school. He says. I nod. Sounds about right. We both laugh because we understand this secret language. We can swap stories of epic fights and neighborhood rivalries, the best ballers, and the longest-lasting couples. Last time we hung out, he showed me his EBT card and said that he's never done that before with any girl. Shared that part of himself where people will make all kinds of assumptions about what life he's had and what future is waiting for him. So, Warren says, pointing his chin across the street, I heard your sister and Ainsley are getting serious. I shake my head really hard. Nope. Not anymore. He laughs. I knew it. Them dudes. Them dudes what? I hope you're not saying that he's too good for my sister. Too good for Janae Benitez? Hell no. Quite the opposite. I spot Mr. Darcy in the window, and then he quickly moves away. Let's walk and talk, I say, taking my flowers with me. I decide that Warren can meet my parents another time. After you, he says. We get up from the stoop and head down Jefferson toward Broadway. Why didn't you say anything to me before about Ainsley? I punch him lightly on the arm. Would you have believed me if I said, Yo, Z, he's gonna try to play your sister? I saw her face that day. Her nose was wide open. You can say that again. And hell yeah, I would have believed you. I already had my suspicions, especially with Darius. Yo, don't get me started on him. Please start, 'cause my fist got his name on it. Warren stops walking and laughs really hard. You're not getting ready to deck nobody. You're not a fighter, Z. You're a lover. So I ball up my fist and punch him really hard on his muscular arm. That's what you get for underestimating me. But Warren doesn't even flinch. He keeps laughing. The way you punch, I think I'm gonna have to fight your battles for you. We continue to walk and I shove him again, but he doesn't even move. Please, I don't need anybody fighting my battles, and you don't punch, you wrestle. Darius needs somebody to deck him in that tight jaw of his. Damn, what you got against Darius Darcy? I mean, did he break your heart too? Hell no, I am nothing like my sister in that department. I just don't like his face. You're in the minority with that one, trust me. I shrug. Whatever, it's one thing to look good, but it's another thing to walk around knowing it. Well, what's wrong with that? I walk around knowing I look good, don't you? He looks me up and down and licks his lips. Warren! I shove him again and laugh. We reach Broadway, and a train is passing by on the overhead tracks. It's a cool, breezy summer day, and everyone seems to be outside. We head into Bed-Stuy along Jefferson. We're now in a part of Brooklyn where some of the brownstones are nicer. A few have for sale signs in the front, while others are completely renovated. They look less like brownstones and more like museums. Real talk, though? Darius thinks everyone's beneath him, especially me, Warren says after being quiet for a while. I stop to turn to him. Spill the tea, Warren, 'cause if you tell me some shit about those boys that pisses me off. He laughs, then clears his throat. I started Easton in the 7th grade. That's their upper school. And back then, there were only like 7 of us. So me and Darius were cool from the jump, even though he was way too corny for me. In that school, the thing to do was play dates and sleepovers. So I'd go to his apartment in Manhattan a lot, and he practically begged his parents to come to my place, even though I told him about the shootings and drug dealers and shit. I even showed him how to walk down the block and keep his head up in case somebody rolled up on us. He thought it was all fun and games, like the stuff he sees in movies. But his parents were not trying to have their son spend the night with some financial aid kid at his welfare queen mother's roach-infested apartment.
What? Did they say that?
I asked. They didn't have to say it. I knew that's what they were thinking. Me and Dee were cool for a while, but then I got into a fight outside of school, and Mr. Darcy tried to get me kicked out. He thought I was a bad influence on his son. But the worst part of that was that Darius didn't even have my back. He was all about coming to my house and seeing how it is out here, but when he came face to face with that shit, he straight up violated. That's street code numero uno. Have your friends back. Always. Ain't that some shit? He's black, but he ain't that black, feel me? The way we do it out here, if your boy gets into a fight, ain't you supposed to have his back? But instead, his pops tried to get me kicked out of Easton.
Dang, Warren. That's messed up. I'm sorry you had to go through that. I didn't know the Darcys were that shady.
The Darcys are bougie, but they don't like drama. They're real protective about their reputation. My mother had to come up to the school and practically beg for me to stay. She threatened to sue for discrimination. After that, Darius wouldn't dare look me in the eye. I shake my head as something inside me comes to a boil. I'm fuming. Those Darcys can have all the nice things money can buy, but they don't have decency or compassion. Now I'm especially glad it's over between Janae and Ainsley. Not only do I have my sister back for the summer, but I know the truth about that family across the street. I'm sorry, Warren, really. What Darius did is not cool. I say, in an instant, Warren's arm is around my shoulder, a little too quick. I appreciate that, Zizi.
Uh-huh, I'm sure you do,
I say, but I don't move away. We walk and talk some more, and by mid-afternoon, we make it back to Bushwick, where the sun is blazing hot and it's even louder than in Bed-Stuy. We run into a few people he knows and who also know me. We go into different bodegas for water, ices, chips, sunflower seeds, and it's all as easy as the warm summer breeze. When we reach the corner of my building, Warren faces me. Suddenly, I can't look him in the face. Warren is smiling and trying to get me to make eye contact, but I keep turning away and laughing, and he keeps trying to get me to see him. I promise I won't hypnotize you, Z, he says while gently taking my wrists and pulling me in.
Yes, you will, I tease.
My eyes won't hypnotize you, but my kiss will. I stop fidgeting and finally look at him. He's grinning so hard that I can't help but laugh. Finally, I stop, but I don't let him make the first move. I keep avoiding him until I'm ready to kiss him. I move in when he's not looking, ready to plant a fat, wet one on his lips, but someone calls my name.
Zuri!
It's Marisol, coming down the block pushing a shopping cart with Layla and Kayla. I quickly pull away from Warren because I'm not going to hear the end of this from now until eternity. Me kissing a boy at the corner for the whole neighborhood to see. Warren pulls on my shirt as a way of asking me to finish what I started, but I reluctantly step away from him to greet my sisters. I'll catch up with you later, Warren, I say with a half smile.
Oh, it's like that? He says.
I said, I'll catch up with you later. I walk away and leave him standing there, waiting and wanting more of me. 14.
You think Howard will take a collection of poems in place of an essay?
I ask Janae as she's laid out on the bed as if someone has stolen all her joy, all her sweetness, and turned her into a stagnant pool of salty water. Even though Ainsley is out of the picture, he's still latched onto my sister's heart. Janae's not crying, but she's taking up a whole lot of space with her heavy sighs and moping around as if she doesn't have her whole life ahead of her.
No. You have to learn how to express your thoughts without any metaphors or flowery words, she mumbles. She's mindlessly scrolling through her phone. It's noon, and she's still not dressed.
Mama's footsteps are headed toward our bedroom door.
Zuri, I need you to go to the check cashing place and get the money order for Madrina's rent, Mama says.
Come with me, Janae, I say as Mama starts to walk away.
Let her be, Zuri, Mama calls out.
Why, Mama? You want her to lie up in the bed all day? It's nice outside.
She's recovering from heartbreak. Let her be.
Are you kidding, Mama?
Don't worry.
You'll catch it one day too, Zuri. Just leave your sister alone. Her voice trails off as she heads into the kitchen. I exhale, shake my head, and stare at the lump that is my sister beneath the old Dora the Explorer sheets. Oh, hell no, Janae. You're letting that stupid boy win. You gotta come out on top, big sis. Let him see that you don't care. Let's get out of here and make sure that you look extra cute. Come on, Nene, please. I shake her, but she doesn't move. I tickle her, and finally her salty self melts back into her gooey sweetness. She keeps laughing long after I stop tickling her. She laughs so hard, tears stream down her face while she sits up, bends over, and holds her belly. I finally have my sister to myself. Our faces are fresh, our hair is done, her dress is flowing, my t-shirt is popping, and we look cute as we walk through Fulton Mall in downtown Brooklyn. Guys were hollering at us ever since we stepped onto the B-26 bus going down Halsey, then after we transferred to the B-25 going down Fulton. Still, those guys are not flies and mosquitoes. Most of them actually look really good, but Janae and I are focused. We finished Mama's errands, and we have the whole afternoon to ourselves without our little sisters, even though they begged Mama to come with us. I had to tell Mama that I was taking Janae out to nurse her heartbreak. We get a nice booth overlooking Flatbush Avenue at Junior's, and Janae insists that our meal is her treat. I saved up most of my money from working at the bookstore on campus, she says as she sips her milkshake. I can't wait to get a job, I say, stirring the ice cubes in my soda. You know, I put in an application to just about every store on the Fulton Strip. I should have done what Charlize did, stay local and get those white people in their boutiques to hire me. The waiter comes to serve our food. Part of me worries that we've ordered too much and that Janae may not be able to cover it all. And that worry shifts to other worries, things I've held in the back of my mind. I wonder if Howard is the right decision, if they'll give me a full scholarship and financial aid package like Syracuse did for Janae. If I should start dreaming about other schools too. Or what if I get to Howard and I don't like it? What if I want to come home? What's wrong, Z? I tell her. I let Janae know all my fears. I lay them out on the table one by one. Change, quiet, money, college, job, space, family, home. Z, Janae starts. Things are gonna have to change. And you just have to open up to it. My whole world opened up the day I took that Greyhound to Syracuse. It's like I knew I wasn't going to be the same person after that, and all it took was a 5-hour bus ride. I didn't realize how closed off from the world we were. I sigh. But what happens if I get into Howard and it's not for me? Janae cocks her head to the side and looks at me just like Mama does. Then you should go visit. Visit where? Zuri, Howard, she says. My insides jump at the idea of going anywhere outside of New York by myself. By myself. But then reality sets in. Even if Mama and Papi let me go, with what money? I dip a buffalo wing into a cup of blue cheese. Janae pulls out her phone and spends a couple of minutes scrolling. I see her typing something. She shows me her phone and I read the screen, confused. She's bought me a round-trip bus ticket to D.C., to Howard, for tomorrow. I look up at my sister in shock. Just go for the day. I'll deal with Mama and Papi. Really? I can barely get the word out. I'm so excited. A whole day to myself, exploring Howard. Yes, really. What are big sisters for? Of course, my whole family has to escort me to Times Square at the crack of dawn, where I'll be hopping on a 6 o'clock bus to D.C. I am so hyped about this trip that I haven't slept. I keep this giant ball of joy inside me so no one takes it away. I'm worried that Papi will change his mind any minute. He's concerned that I'll be traveling alone. I want to make sure they see my face, and I want to look each one of those bus passengers in the eye, he says. But Mama is excited. It's starting to sink in that she's about to have two baby girls in college. Mama packs 3 Tupperware containers of food for me to eat on the bus, and foil-wrapped snacks to eat over the course of the trip. Marisol typed up a budget for me. I'm supposed to spread out the $20 Papi gave me over the whole day. And after waving to my family until the bus pulls off, I finally make it out of Manhattan. I mostly stare out the window, watching this part of the country pass. New Jersey,
Delaware, and Maryland. I take selfies and pics of the fast-moving world to send to my sisters and Charlize. I text Warren, but he doesn't text back right away like he normally does. The last text I got from him was from last night, telling me to have a safe trip. Him and our almost kiss linger in my mind as the bus zooms toward D.C. D.C. is almost like Brooklyn, but much cleaner with way fewer people crowded onto the streets, and less black and brown people too, though I wonder if they've been boxed in somewhere else, like in Brooklyn. D.C. used to be called Chocolate City, the woman sitting next to me says. She's probably noticed how my face has been glued to the window for almost the whole ride. Well, I see a whole lot of vanilla, I say. Yep, I'm from Bed-Stuy. We're starting to see a whole lot of vanilla there, too. Is that happening all over? I don't know, the woman says. I haven't been to all over. Have you? I don't answer her as the bus pulls into Union Station. From there, I take the Metro North, up to Howard University. I walk toward the entrance, and it's exactly how I've seen it in videos and pictures. The brown brick buildings are regal, giant green lawns spread across the campus. It kind of looks like Maria Hernandez Park, but without the playground or the surrounding brownstones and buildings. Most important, without the new white people. There's just people like me, as far as my eyes can see, and it already feels like home. All of Howard is clean and airy. No clutter. No sirens and loud music coming from outside. No bodega gates rolling up and shopping cart wheels on jagged sidewalks. Being here expands my whole world much farther than I could have ever imagined. And I text Janae one giant thank you in all caps, followed by smiley faces, hearts, and balloons. We have to meet our tour guides in the administration building. Inside, there's a long table with a sign hanging in the front that reads, "Welcome to Howard." Two girls are seated behind it, wearing big smiles in the cutest outfits I've ever seen. Their hair is done in long braids, and one of them has fancy designs on her nails. So I walk over to them. "Hi, Zuri," one of the girls sings after I introduce myself. "I'm Diane, and this is Sage. We're juniors here at Howard, and we're student ambassadors." Sage gets up to give me a hug over the table. "Okay, Zuri. About 10 other prospective applicants will join us for a brief tour, and you can learn about Howard University," Sage says. While her hug felt real, that little spiel didn't, but I don't mind because this must be her job. In just a few minutes, I'm surrounded by other kids who look about my age. Diane and Sage step away from the table and, with clipboards in hand, lead the group toward the other end of the yard. "And here we have our founder's library," Diane says, as we approach a large red brick building. "Built in 1939, it's open 24 hours a day, so there'll be no excuse to not get those papers in on time." The library is majestic, with its glowing white clock tower. I feel smarter just by standing in front of it. There's enough wide open space for me to feel like I can actually chase my dreams here, and I'll be able to reach them too. Diane and Sage then walk us over to the Tubman Quad. I think of Hope Gardens, back in Bushwick, with its quads too, but with less green grass and cleanliness, and less of just about everything. Thinking of the projects makes me think of Warren, so I snap a pic for him and text, "You might want to rethink Morehouse and come to Howard." I send a grinning face. As we walk through the campus, I get to feel what it's like to be in college, to be in a place where new ideas and people will reveal themselves to me every single day, and not just any college. A historically black college, the first in this country. I wonder what the girls who slept in my future dorm room over the years are doing with their lives right now. I wonder if they've gone back to their blocks or their towns and changed them in any way. I wonder if Howard changed them, and maybe they couldn't go back to their old hoods because they've grown too big, too tall, not in size, but in experience, in feeling. I wonder how I'll change too. After about half an hour of touring the lower and upper quads, some of the dorms, and the Crampton Auditorium, it's time to sit in on a lecture by one of Howard's professors. As we finish our tour, some cute guys from across the yard call out, "H.U.?" Sage and Diane respond, "You know?" Me and the other kids on the tour laugh and look around at each other. "Y'all don't get to say that until you get accepted," Diane says, but I whisper, "You know?" under my breath anyway as a sort of prayer. We're back in the administration building, where Diane and Sage pull out another clipboard for us to sign up for a lecture. Fewer kids add their names for this one. Good. Less competition. The lecture is on African American history, and the professor is someone I've read about online. Other high school students are here, too, not the ones who were on the tour. Suddenly, my stomach is in knots. This is my competition. I look at my future classmates as we all walk through the campus yard toward Crampton Auditorium, where current Howard students will talk to us before Professor Kenyatta Bello starts her lecture. I wonder which of these kids I can rock with and which ones I'll learn to stay away from. We all spill into the giant auditorium, where there's a huge stage and screen in the front. Janae told me that some classes are held in auditoriums like this, and I'll have to always sit in the front to get the professor's attention. I do just that so I can be seen, noticed, and heard. But other kids have the same bright idea, and the first few rows close to the stage are almost full. There's one last empty seat at the other end of the stage, and I head straight for it. This is musical chairs, and I'm trying to stay in the game. But a girl places her hand on the seat's armrest, looks dead at me, and says, "Are you with Alpha Kappa Alpha?" "Who?" I ask. "The AKA scholarship group. These seats are reserved for them," she says with an even brighter smile. "Oh," is all I say, even though I want to know what an AKA is.